Today's episode of Robin's Podcast is sponsored by jackthreads.com. Let me ask you a question. When was the last time you ordered clothes online and got to try them on before you paid for them? I'm going to bet that that's never happened because it's crazy. Nobody would let you do that, except that's what Jack Threads does, because with Jack Threads, you can try out any of their stylish tees, jeans, and more at home for free, and you only pay for what you keep. It's an amazing idea. Whether it's a big-name clothing brand or a Jack Threads in-house line, you can be sure you're 100% in love with the items you ordered before spending a cent. I don't know about you, but my wife does not really trust me to go out and buy my own clothes, and that's why Jack Threads is great for me, because I can get whatever I want sent here to the house, and if it does not work for some reason, then we could just send it back without a problem. Instead of playing internet roulette and gambling on a new size, you could use jackthreads.com. You have 7 days to decide if the new item is working or not. Try them on, get a second opinion, make sure you love it. And if it's not a fit, don't worry. Jack Threads gives you everything you need to ship things back, including the tape and the prepaid shipping label, all for free. So go to jackthreads.com, enter the promo code RHAP when you submit your tryout for 20% off anything you keep. That's jackthreads.com, promo code RHAP, and save 20% off anything you keep. Never buy before you try ever again. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who curses on the internet less than Julie Chen. I'm Rob Sestrino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to our BBOTT is over party. That's right. Yes, we are here. Hashtag BBOTT is over party. And we are joined by one of the foremost experts in American reality TV voting to help us make sense of an outcome that very few of us, save for Terrence Poll, saw coming. Here is the great Eric Stein. Eric, how are you?
Julie's going full old school last night. That was a BB1. Whoa, that's wild with her cursing.
Yes, of course. Yeah,
Alex, I haven't been this shocked with an outcome since the Undertaker's WrestleMania streak collapsed. This was a jaw on the ground moment for me. I'm rarely surprised watching these things, and I had a moment of whoa.
Yeah, whoa,
that's wild.
Whoa, that's wild.
Whoa, that's wild.
Yeah. All right. Here with us tonight, two members of the LFC. First, a man who is still very, very fired up and ready to go and can't believe this outcome as well. Alex Kidwell. Alex, how are you?
Doing well. Yeah. Very surprising outcome indeed. And quite a night. And yeah, I think, watching those Big Jeff interviews after it was all said and done, I can't help but think back to the beginning where he said, would you rather be loved by America and win?
Oh,
And I'm realizing it's not even possible in this game. You got to be loved by America if you're going to win.
Yeah.
You just have to have both things.
You have to have both things. Okay. And of course, the man who I never heard more fired up on a podcast than I heard him last night, getting so worked up over where is Big Brother sourcing their information from. Taryn Armstrong. Taryn, how are you?
You can't threaten to take away the strategy, Rob.
Yes.
It's the only thing I've got.
He was so worked up about everything. All right. So I'm so glad that Eric is here because, you know, I wanted to come on and talk about this. And I have some theories about how this all unfolded. And I really just thought that I saw Eric tweet about how that he was more shocked by this. And Eric is a person who has told us before on the air he's seen over 800 seasons of reality TV. So to shock Eric Stein is a monumental achievement, right, Eric?
Well, I've thought about it today and I think I figured it out.
Okay.
America is basically a big, dumb child.
Big, dumb child.
That's pretty much what it comes down to. There's only two possible voting outcomes when it comes to America, specifically pertaining to Big Brother. And that's either the most obvious outcome. So whatever the stupidest, most basic, simplest outcome, that's a possibility. For example, who should Eric kiss? That's going to be my showmance. On Big Brother 18, let's help James and let's help Nicole. Very obvious outcomes. And then there's the other outcome, the outcome that we got last night, which is the petulant big dumb child outcome, which is the exactly what Brett said on the podcast last night. I don't like being told what to do, so I'm going to do the opposite just because it'll be funny.
Yes. Okay. So you feel like that this was a coordinated effort, that you think that there was a backlash vote against all of the Big Brother alumni that were saying to vote for Jason?
Against the man.
Wouldn't it
just be great? We're going to take the power. It's so funny because after years of purporting that they hate bitter juries, of course, become a bitter jury themselves. Somehow the fans managed to make it about themselves being butthurt. The game wasn't about them. It was a little bit more about them than it used to be, but it wasn't about their hurt feelings, and it became about their bitterness and just fucking with the process. Ooh, excuse my language, but nonetheless.
We're on the internet. Yeah.
Yeah. I've gone full Julie already.
Full Julie. Okay. So Eric, this is very interesting to me that wasn't exactly what I thought you were going to say. Now, did you take any sort of is this formulated in terms of as a person who's seen all the seasons of Big Brother, or is your own unique experience as being America's player part of this as well?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think I witnessed firsthand America's desire to shake things up. And I think we saw that all season. This is the first season and hopefully only season in Big Brother history that being HOH was a detriment. It sent your ally home every single time. So, what we saw was, hey, what would be funny in this scenario? Not what would be for the best. And the fans made it their own personal mission to inject themselves into the game, which is, of course, part of the fun of it. But it also didn't work.
Yeah.
Plain and simple, because the fans are not good at playing Big Brother. Otherwise, they'd be on the show.
All right, we're going to get to your questions as well. I'm sure a lot of reactions, a lot of thoughts today, and we'll talk about everything that's developed since overnight when the LFC and Jordan signed off last night. So here we are again, 24 hours later to talk about all this. Hashtag RHAP to get your questions in. So I have been sort of like thinking about this all day long and trying to wrap my head around what went on here. And I have another theory that I don't think I've seen anywhere, and I won't get your reactions to this, but this was the final vote of the BBOTT, and presumably you would think that more people voted in this when we have all of these different votes where we had the Survivor Second Chance vote where we sent people back. We thought we had everything figured out based on the exit polling done by the great tabulator, Kurt Clark. And of course, now that's a TV show, which is differently. But we felt like that we had a good sense of how the vote was going to go because we were the super fans on the internet. Is it possible?
Poor Shane Powers.
Is it possible that there were a lot more people voting on this, maybe they didn't vote from week to week on who should get the care package, who should be America's nominee, but is it possible there were more people watching and voting for this than we realized? And ultimately the inoffensive blonde, pretty girl who was just nice got more of a casual vote than we realized was out there, Eric?
I think it's the exact opposite. I think less people were voting than we realized. Because if more people were voting, I think that skews towards the guy who has the 75,000 Twitter followers, not the person who nobody knows. If you didn't know anything about the show and you saw a Rachel or someone who does have a following tweeting in response of Jason, I think you would mimic that and just puppet their words back. So I see what you're saying, but I think it's a few things. Should have been a final two, not a final three, because it hemorrhaged their own votes. So that really made no logical sense whatsoever. And then maybe they should have actually set forth a criteria for voting, because part of the petulance of the whole thing was, well, it's my vote and it's my show. This one's for the fans, so I'll vote on whatever criteria I want. Well, maybe there should have actually been like a reason that is stated that the winner should win, not just whatever the hell I feel like tonight.
But hear me out, because that the same types of people that win, that become the America's favorite type of players, you know, your Jordans, your Jeffs, your Natalie's, your, you know, the inoffensive, like, oh, why do you like them? Oh, they're nice. Didn't Morgan fit that criteria more so? And I'm saying that maybe are there people watching this who are not on Twitter, who we are just are unaccounted for, and maybe just cast the vote for the person who would traditionally win the America's favorite player in a season?
I think to a certain extent, Morgan did become an underdog when the Final Five deal screwed her, and also when the Jambalaya gang screwed her as well. So I think it did become like a little bit of she was the alternative option to people. But then I think it also speaks to something that, you know, you guys discussed a lot last night about the perception of Jason and where Jason fit into all of this. I think that's a huge part of it. from where I stand, I don't understand why people lash out at Jason for taking an opportunity. Most fans or most past house guests would have taken the opportunity. I too hate vet versus fan mixed seasons. I don't think that they're fair, but he accepted it. And then he had to just make the most of it. It's not his fault from that point on. It's production's fault for inviting him. So then they chose to make a Jason centric season, a guy who finished in 13th place, who loved the show, who is an outspoken character. And that's what they got. So I think what we basically saw at the end was a vote for Jason or a vote against Jason. I don't think it was a pro-Morgan vote, but I'm interested that you think that that could be a part of it, but I just don't see what she did other than not be Jason to earn the vote.
Well, because the way that I've sort of just tried to look at this is I don't want to just overstate the importance of the fan community, because I feel like that we tend to, like, we're in the midst of it. We're in the eye of the hurricane, and we sort of like can go on to the different like social networks that are out there and say, okay, he has this cluster of support over here. She has this cluster of support over here. And I feel like it's sort of like the worldview of, hey, we're the only people here on Earth, so that's the only life that exists in the universe. Because we don't see the aliens, they must not exist. And I wonder if maybe that we just don't have every single voting block accounted for.
Well, I mean, obviously, no one's going to dance this dance. We're not going to dive deep into this, but it did very much mimic in parallel the U.S. election, where there was an expected outcome, and then there was the actual outcome. And I think it does speak to what you're saying. But I don't know, I'm still offering the parallel experience where we thought there was that hardcore, even 50,000, 100,000 people that were engaged. And what if by the end there was 800 voters?
I mean, that's definitely possible. I mean, do we have any sense, Alex or Taryn, that of whether there were more votes cast towards the end or less?
I can give you the numbers from my poll, which is that, you know, for most of the season, I was getting, you know, at most about 6,000 votes. The final poll had over 10,000. So that does suggest to me that there were more people who were interested in voting, even in just the polls, which suggests to me that there were more voters than usual for that round. And something else that I thought was significant was that in the prior poll, just a week earlier, the numbers were much more lopsided toward Jason. But, you know, 7 days after that, immediately, as soon as the poll opened, the numbers had flipped and Morgan was in the lead, and she maintained her lead throughout the entirety of the poll, which does suggest to me that even within the numbers that we can count, there was a major shift in that week that went from Jason to Morgan.
Yeah, I think that one of the other things that hasn't gotten a lot of talk is that what did the Justin fans do? How alienated did Justin fans get? And again, how united and organized were there? I don't know about the Justin ground game because I didn't see a ton of it during the season. Alex, you're nodding your head. You think that that was a factor?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think, you know, and I got the impression from, you know, Justin talking to Jeff that Justin fans probably did go Morgan, that Justin would have wanted his fans to go Morgan. And you know, I think that's a thing. And I, you know, I didn't necessarily realize until I started seeing this sentiment more last night, but there are people who were pro Justin who weren't necessarily pro Jason. And if they were, they were kind of turned off by just this last week, Jason kind of saying things about Justin that didn't need to be said. I mean, we've talked about this in past seasons where like it's so natural to vent about the person that's just gone because you've dealt with this person for so many days. Like all you want to do is kind of just let it loose when they're gone. But I think the problem was it was so close to the vote and Justin was so popular that like, and the margin of error is so small that like, it's like any of these things, Justin or, you know, Chrissy Gary Johnson or whatever you want to point to, any one of them could have, you know, put Morgan over the top.
Eric, I'd love to get your take on the idea of Jason not winning and losing the vote to Morgan. Do you think that that was a sign of the success and the popularity of OTT? Or do you feel like that's a signal that there weren't as many people watching OTT as we thought?
I think it's a sign of a format fail, honestly. And I think that there was a lot of really exciting things about OTT that I loved. I thought this was exceedingly well produced. I thought they did a really, really good job with it for what it was. But I don't think this was the correct outcome in the game. Jason was the leader of his alliance and he won when he needed to win. He dictated the action of the season within the scope of what this game was. And Morgan was at best third in command and the leftover of her alliance that was there because Monty and Scott and Alex and Shelby were all bigger targets than her. And that is an effective way to get to the end, but it's really not much different than what Chrissy did to get to the end also. And I think, therefore, it's a design fail. And I don't know what the answer was in this place. And I really don't buy the Jason said horrific things and let's punish him, because that's a very convenient narrative. Because look at Evil Dick. Look at so many people in Big Brother history. It's a very convenient argument to make. But when someone's popular, as we saw with Jeff also, you overlook whatever they say because we love Jeff. We love Dick. It makes no difference what they say. Nobody in the history of BB America has ever said things on the live feeds like Dick. And he was one of the most popular house guests ever. So you can't sell me the bill of goods that Jason, therefore, that's what turned everyone off to him. If anything, that could be appealing to people, I would say.
Mm-hmm. I do wonder, though. I wonder if Dick played in 2016, if it would be the same. I kind of do.
I'm actually on board with what Eric is saying here, because if you look at like the polling throughout the season, as Jason gets more controversial, his side starts winning more votes by a larger percentage. And that continues up until, again, right until the end, right until this last week. And that's when it flips back around on him. And that suggests to me that it's not in reaction to any one thing in particular that he's saying or that he's doing to be that his behavior is changing anything. It's signaling to me that there was something else in that last week, whether it was an anti-establishment kind of thing, as Eric was alluding to, or it was Justin fans flipping over or even just Alex and Shelby campaigning on the outside. I mean, it could be a number of those things, but I do think it was something in the end of the game that really started to shift the weight over to the other side.
It's really interesting to try to take a look at this. And I wish we had better numbers to be able to take this apart, because I really just believe that there is more here than meets the eye. I feel like that we don't have all the information, and I think it's just too neat and easy to say, oh, Jason said offensive things and that's why people wanted to come after him, or to say that, oh, that the too many alumni were supporting Jason and that turned off people. Cause I think it speaks to, if that's the case, I feel like that OTT was a colossal failure and there's a very small number of people that are actually voting, maybe in the thousands and maybe less than 10,000 people total that are voting on this thing. And if that's the case, Eric, I feel like that we won't have another OTT.
I think it's a real toss up, to be perfectly honest. And I think that it was blowback against what felt people resenting the fact that they felt that this was being gifted to Jason. Now, I'm the ultimate non-hater. Jason loves this game and I'm happy he had this opportunity. But I also spoke to numerous past house guests who asked me, why Jason? Why not myself? And there are a lot of people who are wondering, why was Jason being gifted $250,000? And to be perfectly honest, that's almost really what was happening, because Alex Ouellette said it perfectly last night. She said, we can't go after Jason because as soon as we went after Jason, we'd get put on the block. That's what happened to Monty. And from that point on, he was untouchable in the game. You had to have the perfect set of circumstances. They had maybe two shots to even go after him. And to his credit, he won those. And I think we were just seeing the, you know what? I'm not going to give you the foregone conclusion that you instructed us to give you. It was, I'm fighting back against the brainwash. And let's be real here. I mean, Jason's side made some really critical mistakes that even made this scenario most horrific of all. Far and away the worst gameplay of the season was sending home Alex and not Morgan. Mm-hmm. Just kill the care package. Alex is still there and the game is over.
And that was Jason's move, that he was the one that really seemed fixated on Alex. She was the strategist on that side of the house, correct?
Yeah.
I mean, Danielle was on board too, but yeah, it was, I mean, Jason was calling the shots.
Mm-hmm. So Eric, just going back to what you said about why Jason, why was he the person? Now, can you speak to, I feel like that we heard a lot over the summer that there were a number of people that were contacted about possibly going to OTT. And I feel like that I heard that a lot of people said no, they didn't want to be on an internet season of the show. Do you have a sense of how many people that they originally went out to?
I know that Jose was one of the only and top choices, like from the beginning. And I think they tried to match Jose as what the character archetype might be on the season. I think that's really what they were looking for. I think most people obviously don't even know that over the top has a second meaning here. So I think that they were really just trying to sell an over the top opinionated character. As far as my understanding is, I think we were talking more about Devin's and Jose's and less about, I don't think we were ever getting Vanessa, Amanda, Ian, and Derek on this season. I don't think any single such person was even a consideration.
What about Audrey?
I think Audrey was very much in line with the types of characters that we were going to see on this. Yes.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I also wanted to talk about today was you mentioned this, and I saw that on Twitter where you sent condolences to Jason as a person who loves the game, and this was his dream to ultimately do that. And Alex, I think that I saw you send out a similar sentiment. But for Jason,
I just retweeted Eric.
Oh, that might have been it. So same thing. But for Jason, I do feel like that when he comes away from this, I do feel like that the sting is going to go away, to go from that, because I really felt that way, that sympathy for him more the first time in BB17, where he kind of got screwed. He was like, mostly minding his own business, where Vanessa sort of identified him. He's the threat. And he goes out, you know, pre-jury and is out of the house and really misses his chance to be a player in the game. And I remember how sad he was at that point. And I really felt bad for him the first time around. But then, you know, what were the chances that he was going to get a shot to come back? And then really, this was his season. And I just feel like as a Big Brother person in the annals of Big Brother history, as a Big Brother historian, I mean, he went from a footnote to being, you know, a very important person in the history of the show. Surely it would be better to win, but I mean, it was maybe unfathomable that you would think of him as a, you know, what chances did he have to be as a returning player before all this?
And I think that's part of the mystery of this whole Jason element here, that we now have had Jason and Devon and Nicole and so forth back on the show. And yet we've never had the people I just mentioned. Where is Johnny Mac? Where's Derek? Where's Frankie? Where's Amanda? Where's Vanessa? Where's the brigade? There's a question mark. And I do think that there's a level of excitement for them. And I think that these were great returnees in some regards. And I think in other regards, the fan base has that sort of question mark. Because what we really did get here was Jason's season. I mean, and there's very few people in the history of Survivor and Big Brother who had a season. When you look back on Big Brother Over the Top, this is Jason's season, period, end of story. And I do think in some regard, he's very lucky to have had the opportunity. And I think he'll be exceedingly appreciative and grateful for it. And I think it's going to actually sting a hell of a lot. I don't think these things for some people get easier. I think they actually get progressively harder. And as someone who the money would mean something to and someone who loves the game a lot, I know if I went back and played again, it's just so many levels from the respect for the game and also the money. It's a business transaction. And the fact of the matter is Jason's unlikely anytime soon to be closer to getting an additional $225,000. That's the part that bugs me about the vote is it's not just a throwaway. It's not like they get a little ribbon at the end. It's just sum of money that's life-changing to either one of these people. And don't get me wrong, I'm happy for Morgan, but when people are like just doing it to be sort of pissy about it, it does have impact on Jason.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not claiming it's our job to gift Jason the money. I do feel that it was perhaps the audience's duty to gift the rightful winner of the show the money.
Yeah. I also think that Jason, and you guys touched on this last night, I do feel like that he is now very much in the mix for a Big Brother All-Star appearance. Do you think that he is closer to that, Eric, after being the runner-up? Or do you think that as now that he's sort of like painted with this OTT brush, he's not in consideration for some sort of All-Star season?
I don't see him as a likely returnee. I hate that this is the case, but Big Brother casting for years has been pretty crystal clear. You get your certain number of minorities that are on every season. And I think Frankie and Vanessa will represent, his archetype. And I think it's unfortunate that that's the case, but that's what I expect to have happen. I think that Danny, Alex, and Shelby all have a chance of being on a Big Brother proper season, but I don't know if it'll be All-Stars. I could see one of them just being directly on this summer.
Okay. Eric, what did you think of the finale overall? I know Taryn said this might be the best Big Brother finale that they've had, that I certainly did enjoy it, especially once we got to like the point where the whole cast was brought out to the stage. Did you like the format?
I did. I really liked seeing Luan. That was probably the best part for me. That was the biggest takeaway I had. It was good. It was nice to hear from everybody. It was interesting to hear what they sort of fixated on and this and that. I actually, I had missed the pleas the other day, and I was actually pretty pleasantly impressed with what Chrissy and Morgan were able to articulate for themselves. I mean, they built the best case that they could build for themselves in their arguments, I felt.
I'm glad you brought that up. I thought Chrissy was so good in the final three play. Yeah. Like, I mean, like, we sort of like bagged on her all season long, but she did such a good job. And Alex Kidwell, it was reminiscent of Christy in the Australian Survivor finals of like, here's somebody who we said like didn't do anything. It was like, it was all the plan from the start. I could have won this. I could have won that. I could have won this, but you better believe that I had a plan the whole time. I was like, you know, it was kind of convincing.
I hate that this is a thing, Rob. I hate it so much.
Look, that all you have to do is you get to the end, Eric, and then really, like, it doesn't even matter if it was right or wrong. Just have some conviction.
This is why we do need live DRs, is to prove that you're wrong. We all know you're wrong. We have
she was great.
This is the Chrissy they cast, right? Like, this is what this is why she got on the season, because she can do stuff like this. And she was so convincing that Jason was very scared of losing a vote to her, because he was like, oh my God, are people going to believe that she was controlling the season?
She was, Eric, what, right? Am I wrong on this? Wasn't she fantastic?
I'm just going to say this just to piss the guys off. I think she did have intention to her actions all season long. I really do believe that. I really do because the people who put themselves at the forefront are the people who went home. So I think that laying back was a conscious strategy. I do know that I agree. Perhaps she should have articulated that more clearly throughout the season. But I also think everyone has their place in casting. We all come at these things from a very strategy game centric point of view, but it's really a finite point of view. And from a producer standpoint, you need a mix of people. Chrissy's not like anyone we've really had on the show before. Justin was a very new, unique character we saw on the show before. And yes, do I love the fact that someone can play Big Brother who doesn't know that you evict people? Not particularly, but I did like Justin. And I thought he brings a dynamic. You don't need to be the best player to bring something to the show. Jose brought something to the show. He gave us an exciting week one. He was more exciting than when Carol was voted out on week one. You know, there are different people who bring different things, like Figgy and Taylor. They're there. They were there for a showmance, and they had a showmance. People deliver on what they're supposed to deliver on. And I don't think that it's incorrect to have Justin's and Chrissy's on the show, because those are the hardest people for us gamers to play against. Because you don't know where they're coming from, because they don't understand it themselves. So they're total wild cards. I could always anticipate, if I was playing against a true strategist, I would know exactly what they were going to do. Even if it was dangerous and I couldn't stop it, I would comprehend where they were coming from. When you're playing against someone who's just off in their own universe, it adds an interesting dynamic, in my opinion. So I didn't think that Chrissy was a total waste.
I think Abby Maria
was the foil of Stephen Fishback.
Well, no, I think there's a difference between a Chrissy and a Justin, or even an Abby Maria, where Chrissy was just like a very, very stagnant person in that. Like, she sat down at the beginning of the game and she sat there for the rest of the
creature.
Game.
Yes.
Whereas Justin was much more willing to try to figure out something to do. He was certainly very unpredictable. And he definitely wasn't thinking in terms of like pure strategy by any means, but he was still an interesting element to watch. And I think a lot of people appreciated that, where Chrissy, like, there was nothing that was ever going to happen with Chrissy. And we realized that from the start. I do see what you're saying, where like there's a certain element that she brings to the game, but I think that we can bring that element in while also having somebody that can actually like get up and move once in a while.
All I would say is, don't discredit not doing anything wrong, because a lot of people go home because they do something wrong. So then there is a middle ground that's between not do anything wrong and not do anything right. She may have done nothing right, but she didn't do anything wrong. And they're always, when people say, you know, this one's garbage, they got dragged to the end, it's true to some extent, but like 15 people before them did something to send themselves home and she didn't. And you could say it's being useless that is the thing she did, But then she did that more effectively than the people who got sent home.
Eric, I'm interested to know, BBOTT2, if they came to you and said, Eric, look, we'd like you to be the returning player to come back for OTT2, is that something that you would be interested in, or based on the way that this unfolded, that it would be a hard pass?
What do you think my answer to that is?
Hard pass, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Of course, I would love to play a season of Big Brother where the most formidable threat finished 13th on his season, and most people don't even know the basic rules of the game. I would eat these people's faces. I mean, it's not even a thing. This would be a sad demolition. And that's why I would, first of all, I'll never be asked. And second of all, no, I would never do it, because the whole reason I would be interested in ever playing Big Brother again is to actually get to play the game and play it myself this time, which I didn't really get to do the first time. And Big Brother Over the Top prevents that. I would really hate to have things lined up the way that I intended to have America befool my game again. It's just not a situation I personally would be interested in. That being said, I would tell any other alum to dive on it immediately. And 8 weeks later, you will have $250,000.
Now, let's just go to the takeaways from BBOTT 2, because I think that probably just the headline of this is going to be for any person who is an alumni or a person going into this next season of OTT 2 is going to be, Jason lost the game because he made a lot of negative comments about people. That, and tell me if I am saying anything that you feel like is wrong. I feel like that's going to be the takeaway. Do you feel like that the live feeds of a potential OTT2 are going to be particularly milquetoast of people trying to say, you know, Alex, you look lovely today. I you had some choice words for me today. And, you know, if I were a different man, I may have to one day give you a stern talking to.
I think that's what we're looking at for sure. And one of my biggest disappointments about the season was that no one took the opportunity to be absolutely ruthless, because once they told me that Victor's not coming back 9 times and the jury no longer decides your fate and any such thing, I would have taken this as an open invitation to play this game with brutal intentions towards the other player. I don't really see any reason why you couldn't have just been absolutely cutthroat in this scenario. And instead, it did already kind of steer in the opposite direction. And I think it will steer right with the lesson of you get punished for your actions on Big Brother Over the Top. I think it will be very kumbaya the next time. And I think that's disappointing, because I think this would be a great opportunity for someone to play the game in a manner that we do not see over the summer ever, because in the summer, there are repercussions for acting that way. And apparently, seemingly, there may be on Big Brother Over the Top also, although jury's still out as to what the issue actually is.
Because, I mean, I don't think that this is probably a little bit of like a false comparison, but I mean, when you go back to the creation of the jury system in Big Brother, I mean, this is where we had issues with Danielle Reyes, where we say that Danielle Reyes should have won Big Brother 3, but because of things that she was saying in the diary room, and it wasn't America necessarily that heard them, but it was the people that were going home and being on the jury. They heard things that they shouldn't, and it caused them to vote a different way. And I think that the show was concerned that people weren't going to be authentic in the diary room, Eric.
But I think what's the issue here? Like, when did we all become so precious about everything here? I mean, wasn't the original point? I mean, here we are. I bring this up all the time on the podcast. But 20 years ago, we had Pedro Zamora on The Real World handling real issues. We had very inflammatory characters on the first several seasons of Big Brother and Survivor. So why does everything have to be so tidy? Go on the show, behave the way. The whole thing was to see how different types of people interact with each other, learn about people. It's a social experiment. So go on, behave however you want, and then deal with the ramifications. Mm-hmm. As far as I'm concerned, I don't like the production choice to sanitize it for us. Let the players do it or not do it on their own accord.
Yeah. And I will say that, you know, I think that Jason, we have the live feeds every summer. And I feel like that, even for the Big Brother live feeds where, you know, we'll make a lot of excuses along the way. I mean, that there were many moments that were captured that were probably, even yourself, Eric, would have to say, were, you know, above and beyond maybe what might have been necessary. I think that that's part of Jason's charm, and also part of the reason why he gets people upset is that, you know, he gets like a, you know, a broken record on things and really continues to harp on the same subject to the point where it's a little bit ranty at times.
He does. He digs in on people, and he digs in on people in a vicious way.
Like a dog also, with a bone.
Right. I know myself, though, and I'm someone, I use a very colorful vocabulary. I said on my season, I wish that Jen Johnson was eaten by sharks in the jury house. Now, I'm good friends with Jen Johnson. I do not wish that she was eaten by sharks. I described my current distaste for her in that moment in a colorful, ridiculous manner. I feel like that's a lot of what we're seeing with Jason. I also know that there were comments I made on my season that the fans were really appalled and disgusted by as well. And I also know that I'm not an appalling and disgusting person. And I also know what I meant by the comments. And the fans don't know what I meant by the comments. So I guess the question here is he really a vicious guy at heart? And was he saying mean-spirited, nasty, horrible things? Or was this all in the scope of the game? Is this part of the social identity theory? We're going to identify our opponents. I'm going to dogpile on them, and we're going to have common enemies. And that's just his way of describing the situation.
Now, do you think any of this changes the perception of all this based on Jason's reaction outside of the show? For instance, if he, you know, a week from now is not backing down from things that he said in the house on social media and continuing with the same types of things that he's saying in the house, does that change anything for you where you can't say anymore, okay, it was the heat of the moment?
To an extent, but that's not going to happen. He's going to be very jolly and very magnanimous. And I mean, I think that's part of the issue. And that's why when the fans, they lash out against the past house guests, the reason the past house guests are speaking out to support these people is because they know them in real life. They don't know Jason, the reality TV contestant. They know Jason, the person. So there is something to be said for if 100 people reach out. I mean, and when you look at the returning seasons, and there are house guests that people do get behind and people who they don't. Going all the way back to season 13, I remember Danny Donato having a ton of past house guest support and not so much for some of Jeff and Jordan and Rachel and Brendan at times. And I think Jason's reputation outside of the game is that of a guy who loves Big Brother, would live and breathe this show wherever possible. And yeah. I think he has a big mouth on him, and I think most people do, and I think that's also real. I mean, look at how upset the fans got with Justin in the last week of the show. Well, guess what? He just lost $250,000. He's a real person. He's not a television character. He was upset. I would be upset in that situation also. Not everyone handles every minute of every day in the best possible way. And yes, I do think Jason takes it to another level, and I don't know Jason well. I'm not defending Jason. And I think that that's actually, I should have stated that right up front. Jason's not a close buddy of mine. I've met him a handful of times. He's very nice to me when we've met him, and I'm happy that he had the opportunity. But I'm not here to defend Jason. I just think that Jason did what people do when they're filmed 24 hours a day, and he made the most of the opportunity. I really do believe that.
Yeah, and I get that. And I feel like that the reason why I especially wanted to talk to you tonight is because that you are, you know, such a student, not just of the strategy of the game, but also of the genre, and especially had this background of having these votes from America. So I do hope that people take what you're saying with a grain of salt in terms of not being a Jason defender.
Yeah, I'm not an apologist, and I'm not apologizing or speaking on behalf of lewd comments and this and that. That's not what I'm saying. And if people choose to interpret it that way, they're not listening to what I'm saying. I'm not saying that I'm in support of what he said. I'm not saying I would say or feel those things. I'm just saying, as we always say, you try being filmed 24 hours a day with a life-changing sum of money with people who are there to steal the money out of your pocket. These are not your friends or family. This is not how you behave in regular day-to-day life. And people who want to say this is a reflection on who you are, that's really boiling it down. It's not really true.
Okay. I want to start to get into questions as well. Hashtag RHAP on Twitter to go ahead and get those questions into the show. Eric, do you think that they should release these OTT contestants back into the wild so quickly? I mean, I feel like what a culture shock it must be for somebody, whether it's Jason or whether it's even the other house guest, to sort of like come back into this super polarizing world. You know, it's sort of like that we compare the Big Brother house to sort of like being underwater in a scuba tank, and they should like start to pressurize you a little bit instead of like, okay, thanks for the 2 months, here's your phone back.
Yeah, no, you hit the nail on the head there. There needs to be the in-between process, the transition period, absolutely. When you're in the heat of the moment, I remember coming off of a real season. I mean, it was easily Thanksgiving, holiday season time before your head is even stopped spinning from the whole thing. Your hours are off. Your perception of everything is off. You're very in it, and you're still tense about the whole thing.
And there was much hate on MySpace, right, Eric?
Yes. Yeah, it's a vicious place, MySpace.
So many people had I Hate Eric in their top eight.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it is tricky. And I think it's that I'm very happy that social media wasn't more prevalent when I was on, both the reading it. I mean, the first thing that the staff psychologist says to you is do not go on the internet, which is basically just telling you go straight to the internet and read all of the horrible things about yourself. It's a lot. Even the person with the thickest skin, when you go on, I mean, I know I've talked to cast members from Big Brother and Survivor, the most attractive people on the planet. And they tell you about how the threads that about things that were said about them that are so beyond the pale insane. And it's a lot. It really is. It's a lot. And in this case where there's just no transition, no sequestering, no jury, and it's just have at it. Yeah, I think there's a lot of stress. And I think these people will probably be spinning from a while from it. And I think that's why there is a lot of camaraderie in the post house guest, post reality contestant life, because we're the only other people who get it. So we understand it. We don't hold the stress against you when you're acting a little cuckoo for the first few months afterwards.
Eric, if Jason was to somehow reach out to you today and say, Eric, I'm besides myself. I thought I was going to come back. I thought I was going to win. I've got all these people on Twitter. What would you tell him to do? What would be your advice for a Jason today?
I would tell everyone to just try and enjoy the experience, because when Canada starts in a few months, they will be no longer relevant. I mean, no, seriously, the thing is, like, I was very fussy about opportunities and should I do this event and should I go out with this person and this and that. And what you don't realize is if you love this, dive into it, do as much of it as you want. If I were Jason, I would revel in this and enjoy every single second of it. And focus on what you said before, the fact that he got the opportunity, a once in a lifetime opportunity twice, or as Survivor goes, four times, five times, seven times, whatever the case may be. But Jason was not sitting around expecting this, you know, so the fact that he got the opportunity, got the call, got voted in, got votes that were in support of him. He knows there's love out there for him, as do all the other cast members. So I think he should just try his best to focus on the positive.
But is there an opportunity for Jason to win back support of people that probably voted him into the house? I mean, I can't imagine what the vote was between Jason and Jose, but I have to think that he got into the house. He probably won the first vote that he was in by a huge margin, and then ultimately loses a vote against somebody that nobody knew from a hole in the wall by a small margin. So there's a lot of people that voted him in that got turned off by him somewhere along the way. Is there anything that he should be doing to sort of reach out and sort of try to, you know, make things like cool things down around him? Or do you think that he's probably not interested in that?
No, it doesn't need to. The fan base is incredibly fickle, and in 10 days, they'll all be right back on his side. I mean, yeah. I can't tell you how many people after my season came up to me and told me how much they hated me and then begged me for a picture and then had a half hour conversation with me about how much they hated me. So, you know, the support is there in whatever bizarre manifestation that it takes shape, but he's not going to need to rehab his image. I mean, the cast of Big Brother 15 are some of the most successful past Big Brother house guests in real life. You go back to your real life, you know, you always have the option of pulling an Eric Stein and just staying off of Twitter if you want to, you know,
for 6 years,
you don't
years,
need to
right.
subject yourself to it. This is up to you.
Yes. Okay.
The ego won't allow it. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably. Well, I think that maybe
my ego, because Rob told me I was going to get good 75,000 followers and I got not even 10% of that.
Yeah. I really thought you would.
He
really
promises. He does.
Yeah. Sorry about that. I really thought, you know, maybe we missed the window.
Haven't been the same since.
Yeah.
Haven't been sleeping.
Okay. I want to start to get into some questions for Eric. Taryn or Alex, do you have anything that you want to ask Eric?
I do want to address the one of the points you made about you felt like Jason lost the game rather than Morgan won the game. And I do think that's true to an extent. I think that a large part of Jason's loss came from a lot of his own actions. But I do think that Morgan had a bit more to offer than maybe you're realizing or maybe you're crediting her for. If Jason was up against Justin, I don't think Justin is going to beat Jason just because Justin isn't Jason. I think that Morgan did bring something to the table. I think a lot of that had to do with her alliance and the people she surrounded herself with. I don't think she was the most popular one of those people. But the things that she did in the game and with those people allowed her to achieve a level of popularity. And I think that her competition wins at the end was another big point of it, where it's like being an underdog and winning competitions. It's something that, like, I don't really understand exactly why, but it always seems to garner you a lot of goodwill. And I think that one of the factors that flipped the vote toward the end was seeing Morgan crush Justin in that final competition as an underdog. People were like, yes, Morgan, the underdog, she's winning. She won herself there. And I think that I think that Morgan had to be there in order to win. Somebody from the other side had to be there. I'm not sure that anybody else can beat Jason in that scenario. I do think it had to also come from that place of people wanting to see Morgan win.
Well, I agree with you, but I guess I'm glad you brought that up, and I don't want to discredit her game. And I do think she did a lot of things right, but I don't think it was really by intention. I think it was by circumstance. And I do think that if Morgan would have defeated him, then Alex definitely would have. And so would have Shelby. And so would have what's her face? Also the other one.
Scott.
Yeah, yeah, maybe. No, that's Scott. No.
I agree with that.
Sorry. Go ahead.
I agree with that too, where it's like, I think that we saw a lot of combinations heading into that final three where it's like, if Danielle had been there with Justin and Chrissy, I think Danielle wins. I think a lot of who won ended up being very circumstantial. That's something that's interesting because, like, the change from the final two to the final three, I think had a very drastic impact on the outcome of the season. Because if you look at this situation where it's the final three and it's Chrissy, Jason, and Morgan, and there's a final HOH and somebody's taking one person, then we're definitely seeing a drastic difference. I think we're seeing a difference in who they're taking to the end in the first place. I think, you know, who knows if Morgan is even still there. Maybe Shelby is still there. I think there are a lot of, like, I think that a lot of this came down to circumstance, especially when we look at the fact that there was a difference of 500 voters. And, like, that's insane to me. And any number of any small things could have changed the outcome. And that's just, it's crazy what it came to.
I'll tell you the why I discount Morgan a little bit. And that's because I think that the fan base, and I think generally some of, you know, the live feed crew at large and this and that, have discounted the impact of the sister twist. I think that the sister thing is an enormous advantage to Alex and Morgan. I mean, almost immeasurably huge. And everyone's like, what's the big deal? So there were sisters in there. It was the equivalent of them being in the same alliance. Well, first of all, they chose to join the same alliance. They could have been on separate alliances and protect each other. They get double the votes. It's 100% more votes than anyone else is playing with. So that's huge. If I am there with a loved one, I have complete trust in them. If I'm having a bad day and say I'm feeling homesick, I can tell them that without them spreading it and using it against me. I can run strategy against them without them running and telling people that who's came out of my mouth. It's a huge advantage. And if people don't think that it's a huge advantage, then why in every scenario that this has ever happened on the show, did they make the end? The Pack Bros, the Nolan twins, Rachel, Dick and Danielle, every single time someone has had a truly trusted ally and an extra vote, they made the end of the game.
What about the twin twist from season 5, Eric?
I think for
a second.
What about those crazy twins?
Yes, I think that they were in another time and place.
Yeah, I can tell you.
But you forgot Cowboy and Nicomas.
Well, Cowboy did.
I can tell you that I completely was on the same page as you at the beginning of the season. I was saying I thought that by the end of the season, we were going to say that this sister twist was incredibly overpowered. And that it shouldn't have been introduced into the game because it's too much of an advantage. However, over the course of the season, I kind of started to look at this game differently than I looked at a regular game of Big Brother, where the strategy, the benefits to any sort of strategy seem to be much outweighed by America's siding with you, essentially. Having America like you was much more important than having any kind of advantage strategically. And so looking at it from that perspective, I definitely saw like the coming in with a pre-existing fan base as a significantly larger advantage than having a sister, because having a sister is not going to necessarily get you any more fans, which I think is the most important part of this game.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. I mean, I was just going to say, yeah, I mean, you know, obviously Morgan does get nominated once by America. Of course, Jason never does. And I mean, you know, obviously you can point to something like Jason evicting Alex when Morgan can still win a care package. It's like there weren't a lot of strategic opportunities here, but that's a big glaring error. One thing that I just keep coming back to that I really wonder about is if he evicts, say, Justin and Chrissy and goes to the end with Shelby and Morgan, does he win? Because like, does the person who goes to the end with two people from the other side win yes. in almost every scenario?
Absolutely. Yeah. And also the other thing is that when you have two people playing, they're playing for the same goal. Do not believe this line of bullshit for one second that these two weren't going to work together. That's completely malarkey. Mm-hmm. Absolutely absurd. As is a father and a daughter, as is an engaged couple. And it's absurd to even purport otherwise. And so therefore, when Alex goes home, Morgan's still there. So you basically have to eliminate them twice working towards the same goal. And like an example of that would be on Big Brother 13, when Danny, Kalia, and Danny were HOH's three in a row, and they had to get out Brendan. Then there was a twist, get out Lawan, and then they get out Brendan again. What if those HOHs instead got out Brendan, Rachel, and Jeff? Then the game's over in their favor. But instead, you just have to keep getting out Brendan. And then when you get Brendan out, Rachel's still there. So it's like, it just becomes one of these things where it just affords them other opportunities. And it's an extra built-in vote, which is a big deal. I mean, especially when you are counteracting America's vote. And like, I could almost pallet America having a vote in the eviction. I don't think pallet's a word, maybe. I don't know. Nonetheless, it didn't sound right. Nonetheless,
palatable.
Palatable. It was like a short form of it, but I feel like I just introduced a whole new way of using it.
I'm going to allow it.
Yes. Nonetheless, you could deal with that as a gamer. You could strategize to combat an extra vote. You could get more alliance members. You could game that out. But once you have the nominees and the care packages and this and that, I agree. I said this at the very first week of the show. People had to stop feeling like they were playing Monopoly when they weren't. They were playing Monopoly adjacent. And this just wasn't Big Brother. It was kind of sort of Big Brother. But Big Brother, summer version, hasn't been Big Brother for a long time either. That's why we all love the competitions on this. You know, that's a scripted primetime soap opera now. It really is. It's like, it's about the drama and the showmances and this and that. And I shouldn't say scripted, but it's all, the focus is on the storytelling of the soap opera of Big Brother. And I mean, I don't even mean this in an insulting way, but Morgan, Nicole, and Steve are a far cry from Derek, Andy, and Ian in terms of the caliber of gamer that are winning these more recent seasons of the show. And that's what I loved on Over the Top were the competitions, because they were old school competitions that I feel speak more to the skills of Big Brother as we had once thought of it. Whereas now with the spillover Sunday competitions and this and that, those are really built for Corey types to win the show. I'd be pissed if I was on the show and Corey was demolishing me in every competition because he's a college athlete where he's never seen an episode of the show and I know everything there is to know about the show. So I thought that Over the Top at least afforded some opportunities of some basic elements of the game, but you had to leave most of the game completely at the door, in my opinion.
Eric, if Jason had won the game, would you have put him in that first category of, or I guess the second category of strategists alongside of the Derek and Andy and Ian?
I wouldn't have, because I would actually say the person from the recent couple seasons who stands out is Paul, because Paul was the person who didn't know the game and learned it on the fly and adapted himself to it. And that was the most impressive thing we saw. Jason would have been afforded the opportunity of knowing so, so much more about this show than so many of the other players. I mean, it's a gift to be given Monty's and Justin's to play against when they are the formidable, you know, like physical threats and competitions. And And it's not anything to discredit them. They just don't know the game. You can't play against someone who has had the experience and knows it in and out the way that Jason does if you don't know it. It's almost an impossibility.
Well, it also helps if they're taking bathroom breaks during HOH competition.
I thought that Alex brought up a great point about Big Brother OTT, where like it does seem like the dominant strategy here is to take two people from the opposite side of the house. Somebody asked me, John Hancock on Twitter asked me, if Shelby Morgan and Jason were the final three, who wins? And I think it's Jason in that scenario. I think the roles reverse. Shelby and Morgan siphon votes from each other, and Jason comes out the victor, which is an interesting thing to think about because he had the opportunity to keep both of them in the game and take his chances on making it to the final three. We know he would have won that, probably would have won that final competition. I'm not saying I fault him for making the move he did. I think it was the correct move in the moment. But looking back on it, he probably wins if he decides to take out Chrissy instead of Shelby, which is an interesting thought and something to think about for future players. Because if it is a final three, you need to start thinking about, you know, this even if it's a very small amount of vote split, that could be the difference between you winning and you losing. And in this case, it really could have.
Yeah, well, it's backwards logic strategically, but we've seen that, you know, HOH wasn't good this season. There's a lot about this season where what was implemented actually creates backwards strategy that needs to be, you really do have to play it in reverse to a degree.
Yeah, we certainly talked this through a lot during the Survivor San Juan del Sur, especially where you had John and Jacqueline and Missy and Baylor both getting to the end. And we talked about this idea of, you know, should you vote out your loved one when you get to the final four? And I think it would have been a very interesting situation if we would have seen Alex and Morgan both make it to final four. Does one of them say, okay, I should go home in this point. I should throw both of these competitions to give the other one a better chance to get to the end rather than the Willett sisters split the vote, Eric?
Final four, yes, but that wasn't the scenario that we saw here.
Sure.
And you can't diminish your own chances of actually making it to the end. You got to get to the end in order to win first. So the final five, I'm not going to vote out the ally who gives me a much better chance of making it in votes, in competitions, to the end of the game for setting up the better voting scenario. I'm going to get there and try the win. But if this was at the final four, then I think you guys are 100% correct. Then I think you axe your own and bring them for the very reason of the vote split. But I think it would be very risky at five or six to do that and have to win out to get yourself there, to put yourself in intentionally diminished numbers for the purpose of angling towards a possibly better voting scenario would, in my opinion, probably not be worth its while, although it would be effective if you got there.
Yeah.
Do we know it would work for Chrissy, for example? Like, we don't know that.
Yeah, and I do. I want to reiterate, I agree with Eric. I think it's too early to make that move. I do think that Jason made the right move in that moment. It's too risky of a move, but it is something that I don't think a lot of people thought about, and it's something that you should think about. It's something you should consider, even if it does end up being too risky. And it's an interesting layer of strategy in a game with not a lot of strategy. So it's something that I think people should think about for the next season.
All right. Let's start to get into some of these questions that we have for Eric. I'm sure the chat room is lit tonight. Lots of questions. Edward Morris wants to know, did Adam Pock make promises for Morgan to win? Boy, the one BB alum, Eric, that really came out very pro Ball Smashers was the great Adam Pock. I had said on the podcast the other night to Alex Willett that maybe should you guys have Adam Pock endorse Jason potentially to get people to be anti-Jason, but he did not. And a victory lap for Adam Pock.
Hey, what's a better way to get attention? To be one of 90 who are in support of Jason or be the one who's speaking the contrarian viewpoint? I think it was really nothing more than trolling the trolls for the most part. And I also do think, and I'm friends with Adam and I'm friends with his wife, and I still think that he may have a fancied Shelby. So I think that was a big part of his rooting interests.
Yeah. And Rob, I will say there was a late endorsement from Jason Guy.
Yeah. Who knew?
So, maybe it wasn't Adam so much as
Jason
that.
Guy's watching OTT.
Yeah. In my casting process, I cited Jason Guy as the player who I had felt played the best male game prior to my season, and I was almost thrown out of the interview.
What? What's they were
like, they're like, you need to go a little bit more mainstream for us. And I was like, nope, sorry. Yeah. You asked the question. That's the answer.
Okay. So at that point, you're only allowed to answer Kaser or James Ryan then.
I just say Will. Right?
Yeah, or Will.
I just found out I have no chance of being cast.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. They were not appreciative of that look at all.
All right. This is from John Densford. If America's Player was a thing on OTT, do they automatically win if they got to the end? Is it like finding the Matrix, Eric? Does that make your head hurt to have a America's Player in BBOTT?
No, this was the perfect opportunity for America's Player. I can't believe they didn't do it. I'm shocked that it wasn't done. I really thought that. I was actually legitimately surprised I didn't get the phone call, because I think it's been made crystal clear that they have no desire to see me back on the summer show. But to torture me again online seems really very much their speed. So I was actually kind of surprised that that wasn't a consideration. What would be better American involvement than that? And then the best part is, what would have really been hilarious is they would have made America's Player do things that were not even in line with their own votes and their own nominations. So then it really would have been trippy. No, and I think they would have lost in the end. I think America is self-loathing. I don't think that they would help their player at all.
Yeah, so, well, the whole season long, we were talking about, like, can we evict America? If they had the option to evict America's Player, I bet they would take it.
I've been on a 9-year plan to evict America from Big Brother.
Yeah.
How's that working for you?
But the thing is that we talk about, oh, America did this, America, like, there's one mindset, and it really is just like, you know, whatever group is more motivated at a certain point. Like, I don't think that there was any sort of plan. And that's why I just don't feel like that there was one group here at the center of it was these people that were actually the most powerful, It was just a bunch of different reasons that stuff ultimately ended up happening.
But speaking to the Big Brother fandom hive mind of it all, and I've mentioned this many times before, the one thing I don't understand is, if you hate the show so much and you think everything's rigged and everything's unpleasant and everything's miserable and every rule change stinks, why are you still watching the show and spending hundreds of hours a week tweeting about it?
Don't tell me what to do, Eric. Don't tell me what to do.
I'm going to come for you, Eric. No.
I'll snatch that wig so fast.
Yeah. I understand diving in and embracing something that you truly love, but it feels like a lot of people love to complain about it, which is not the same thing as loving the show. We love the show and we like to joke around about it and we like to really analyze it, but at the core of it, we still love it. Yeah. I feel like a lot of these people really turned on the show, but they're still in the community, which really makes for a sometimes toxic sort of feel for this back and forth.
Sure. But do you think that there were people that voted on these things that were not in the community?
I don't see why or how. I really don't. I can't imagine people having paid for this and been like closeted people doing this or whatever. It's just hard for me to envision that. If you're someone who knows about this, takes this seriously enough that you've invested the time, you're seeking it out, you're paying for it, I think you're involved in it. That's my take on the matter. And I think, let's look at it this way. If the numbers were huge and this was some sort of smash online success and CBS has now blown up the model for over-the-top programming, we would hear about this. The fact that there's been no coverage of what the subscribership is indicative of the fact that it probably was more a smaller community.
Okay, let's talk this through. So how many people I know you don't have the exact numbers, how many people subscribe to the Big Brother live feeds in the summer?
I think either you guys would know better than I would, probably.
I mean, is it 100,000? Is it 500,000?
I don't think they've ever released those numbers.
Yeah, you would think, from my standpoint,
50,000?
If people are seeking out Australian Survivor and Big Brother Canada and The Genius and this and that, then I would think, if you were a feed subscriber, why wouldn't you continue as a feed subscriber? If you're someone who loves this thing, why not take another 8 weeks of it?
Yeah.
Or at least have the opportunity. I mean, it's $5. Go skip your Starbucks for one day and you have the option. And the thing is, a lot of people said they were so overwhelmed by this, but the fact of the matter is, the weekly episodes or the daily recaps did a really nice job of telling the story. So you could have opted to watch this as a short form regular season. You could have watched 9-10 episodes and just moved on with your life and paid $10 for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't know. So I like to me, I initially thought it was actually going to have a lot more of a following than it did, because I thought any summer feedster is going to stay on board for this. But I don't feel like that's ultimately what we got. I think we, like you keep saying, we are very aware of the Reddits and the Twitters and the Survivor Sucks in all of these communities. But I don't really do think that speaks to anything other than the 300 people who are tweeting all day long about it.
And yeah. I do think, you know, Eric talking about how you have to pay for it. I mean, it does raise another interesting point where it's like, if all these former Big Brother players come out and endorse Jason, where are new voters going to come from? They're going to like suddenly pay for all access just to cast a vote for Jason. Where conversely, maybe people who were fans of the other side who had become like disenfranchised and stopped caring and weren't going to vote, see that, you know, video or see all these endorsements and do have the kind of reaction that Eric's talking about, where it's like, you know, I wasn't going to vote, but if people who haven't even watched this season are going to, you know, lend their weight to get him the win, then screw it. I could definitely see that.
I would just love to get sort of like the exit polling from the person who is sort of like disconnected from the hive mind, not the Z hive mind, of everything going on in social media and doesn't listen to podcasts, isn't on Twitter, doesn't go to Facebook groups, doesn't go to Reddit, doesn't go to Jokers, doesn't go to anything, but just was a Big Brother fan. Oh, they're doing Big Brother on the internet. Let me sign up for CBS All Access. I'll watch the recaps. Didn't watch the live feeds. I wonder what they came away from this season thinking. Well, did they end up, were they pro late night jamboree or were they pro ball smashers?
I don't think that exists. I really don't. Who
it has to exist.
What? Who are these people? If you're someone who seeks this out, then you're someone I think, I know what you're saying, but I really think that this is a special case here because
6 million people watched this show during the summer. There wasn't 10,000 people that said, okay, let me go ahead and try CBS All Access and weren't on Twitter.
House guest saying, I didn't know. When we did the live show in New York, we had past house guests saying, oh, they're doing Big Brother online now. I don't think it's common knowledge unless it's knowledge that you're choosing to seek out. But I do think that they kind of went out of their way in those middle episodes. If we're looking at the edit, which seems so much less relevant here, I think that they were obviously promoting the ball smashers in the middle episodes. And I think also if we really looked at it, the ball smashers smash one ball and it was Scott. So it didn't, like, you know, they can promote whatever edit or agenda they want. We still know what's actually happening.
But I bet the recap came out more pro ball smasher. I think that they came off as the underdog, and especially that, you know, Morgan was so inoffensive at the end and she won those competitions. And it's such a reality TV trope of, especially a woman who comes out and wins a bunch of competitions at the end and she lost her loved one. I really feel like that those people probably, especially like the last couple days, where you saw a lot of Jason complaining about stuff, and Morgan, I mean, really, she was never complaining towards the end. I think that people probably came out with a much more positive, favorable rating of Morgan.
I don't think that was really the edit so much as like, I mean, I feel like Jason was they used some of the easy stuff of Jason in those last couple of weeks.
Sure. I know you're saying that but that's what actually was happening, and maybe it was faithful to the events. But I feel like that in terms of what was seen by the people in those daily recap shows, I think it was more of a pro Morgan storyline down the stretch.
Yeah. The more I think about it, the more I think that you really might be onto something. When I was thinking about the votes, I was definitely thinking in terms of what Eric was saying, where I was figuring new voters, they're going to recognize like people who haven't been watching or that haven't been voting. They're going to look at Jason and see him as a familiar face. They're going to see, you know, alumni showing support. They're going to just be like, oh, yeah, I like Jason. I loved Jason on Big Brother 17, or I enjoy his jokes, and that they would vote for him. But I think that you're right in that there definitely could be a more casual viewer of Big Brother Over the Top that is probably just watching the recaps, probably didn't even bother to vote throughout most of the season. But when it came down to the final vote, they were like, well, yeah, I want to say in who wins. And that person might have favored the Morgan camp because they saw her as the underdog. And they maybe didn't want Jason to win. You know what? Like, I feel like I'm starting to come around to this idea.
Uh-huh. Well, let's say they had 500,000 viewers. I don't want to get too TV inside shop here, but 500,000 viewers is a decent cable number. You know, if they, let's say they got up to that sort of level.
That sounds high to me.
Okay, yeah. But I'm saying, if you got up to that type of level, What I'm saying is we would know about this. This would be all over Hollywood Reporter and Deadline and all Variety, all of these things. This would be like the biggest campaign, you know, bringing this out to brag about it. So you know that the numbers aren't that high. They're like within a reasonable amount. We can basically earmark, I would say that this maxes out at 250,000 an episode. And I would say that would probably be fairly generous. And I think, I think we probably see like a very active 2,000 people online. So you're right. So there are people who are unaccounted for, but I've yet to meet a single person who was one of those. Like, have any of you encountered anybody who was not in the heat of it all, but who was just kind of watching it off on the side?
Well, let me just put this out here, that Big Brother Over the Top, the Twitter account, the official sanctioned CBS Big Brother Over the Top Twitter account, has 21,000 Twitter followers. I mean, that's not a huge number. That's a third less than Jason Roy has.
And three times more than me.
I also think Eric makes a good point. I hadn't thought of that when thinking about the numbers, but I think he's right. I think that if this was a huge success for them, they would be bragging about it. I don't know if they'd release the numbers, but I think they'd say, what a success. What a great number of votes that we got for this winner vote. Instead, they didn't say we got an astounding number of votes. They said it was a really close vote. That said, I think that also says that that it wouldn't take a large amount of unaccounted for people on social media to sway the vote. The vote had always been close all season long. So if there was even, you know, a couple thousand people who weren't very involved in social media, but were watching the season and not really paying attention to the votes until the very end, those people could have swept in and changed this vote to the point where it was as close as it was.
What if people were totally disenfranchised with the whole thing by the end? Hated all three of the options, and that skewed the voting. And it's like, maybe if, for example, you had a super popular house guest who made it to the end, maybe they would have won in an absolute destruction, and what we got at the end was actually indifference.
But I think that Morgan was almost the person that was impossible to hate in the end. I'm sure there's some people that are out there that hate Morgan, but I probably feel like that it's not because of anything that she ever did directly. It's probably because of stuff that either Shelby or Alex or somebody on that side.
What she didn't do. That's why people are mad at her.
Yeah, but I think that that's even that's not a huge number, and she's just so that she checks, like she's like she's nice, she's friendly, she's pretty, she has a story where she is coming back. They got rid of her sister. You know, she was a tough fighter in the end. She wasn't, you know, she persevered. So I think that she just has so many like net positives that she was, if you weren't like living and dying with the season, she was such an easy person to sort of get behind.
She was the tick that burrowed in the deepest, basically.
And let me just also say that, and I understand there's people that also that like, that I know, probably most of the people that are watching the show, lived and died with the season, and they really came to like Morgan too. So she had that appeal also. So she had sort of like her built-in audience, and I think she captured the undecided.
Yeah, and something that I was forgetting about was that, I mean, we get all the time people who don't communicate with us regularly, but will on small occasion say, hey guys, I don't even watch the show really, but I listen to the podcast. Like I follow along. I'm still a subscriber, but I'm not really invested in the show, but I'm around it. I'm not talking about it. I'm just listening. I'm listening to things. I'm listening to people talk about it. I'm like catching stuff here and there. And so that could be an example of these people that we're talking about.
Yeah, Taryn, I need an exit poll on this. The undecided voter at the end, did they go Jason or did they go Morgan? Where did the undecided?
Overwhelmingly Chrissy.
Yeah, Eric, did you have something else?
Yeah, I was just going to say, though, who do you guys, who's like the comparison? Who is Morgan on a different season? Because to me, I don't think I'm entirely on. I thought she was very pleasant. She was sort of indifferent. She was close Jordan to Boyd. A non-entity that had a couple of decent moments. So who was she on BB18 or another recent season or a
Natalie.
Recent survivor? That's what I like. Right.
I was going to say Jordan Lloyd.
But I think Jordan had a way better social game, in my opinion. I think Jordan was possibly one of the most likable people ever in that house the first time, not the second time. I think the first time she was just really all smiles all season long. Like Morgan was closer to just there. Like, I don't think that she was like the ray of sunshine in the house or anything. And I'm not claiming that she played a bad game. She played played a game. She was fine. Like, she did what anyone would do who just had like a moderate level of pleasantry and skill in the game.
There's been so little strategy this season. It's like, yeah, like, well, Morgan was better than her alliance because she's the only one who was like willing to talk to Neely. It's like, that's like, right, what we're working
with. There was so much negativity and she was able to stay above it for the most part, especially towards the end where she was even able to have a better relationship with Justin and Chrissy or Jason and Chrissy than even Justin was, who was working with them the whole time.
But isn't Morgan like Sunday on Survivor or something? Like, isn't she just like a member of the alliance who's a vote? Isn't that really what she is? Like, she didn't really rise above in any way.
I think maybe she's like Nicole 1.0 on season 16, where she's able to win some competitions here and there. She has this likable underdog quality. She has a decent social game in the house. People don't really see her as a threat for a while. But eventually need to take her out. I mean, I think Nicole probably had a little bit more clout in the house than Morgan did. But I think that when you look at the games, I think Nicole's first season is probably a winning Big Brother OTT game. And that's I think, an important difference.
Nicole and Jordan, to me, are Whitney. That's who they compare to in this experience. More of the bubbly, like truly people want to have her around in the house. And I do think that that's a big skill in Big Brother, way more so than Survivor, not only in the trustworthiness, but just the pleasantry of having them live with you for what is a very long duration of time. So for me, that was more Whitney, the bubbly one and the friendly one. And Morgan was just more of the like non-entity. Is the way I really see it. And I know you guys do know better than I. You watch a hell of a lot more of this and analyze this a lot more than I do. So I could be missing out on some of the intricacies of her strategy and the subtleties of her social game. But from what I know, I think she was just kind of being herself, hanging out for the summer, and she did an okay job with it.
Well, I can't.
Like I said, I think people will argue, like people would argue that with you. But I think, yeah, at that point, you're really, you know, you're really getting down to fine hairs when you're trying to point to the things she did right, because it's like everyone was doing everything wrong from a social perspective all season. So if she like wasn't overtly mean, is that something we can credit her with? I don't know. I feel
in this
like,
house.
Right. But I feel like maybe like the Natalie White comparison is kind of good too, where it's like, you know, she was like, oh, well, I killed a rat that one time. And they're like, yeah, she killed a rat. And we hate this guy.
Was Jason, I mean, and maybe the answer is yes. And again, I know, I was not defending it before, was just speaking to what life in the house is like. But was Jason at that level of vile? Like, Jason was not Russell Hantz. Come on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is, you know, apples and oranges here, because we don't have 24-hour live feeds of Russell Hantz. But I mean, I think that between, you know, the things that he said, which, you know, you can, you know, watch, you know, on demand at any point, like, you know, he said a lot of bad things that, I mean, that we can't deny what he said. Is that a reason why he shouldn't win the game? For some people, I think it was. The armpit stuff with the pillow, the nose picking, that's not good, Eric.
The game is flawed.
It wasn't the best.
Not good.
it wasn't
the best.
It's
not ideal.
I do think I believe from a strategy standpoint, maybe got a little overly comfortable. I really think he thought this was in the bag, and I think he did let to show a little bit more of his true color show, and maybe took the immaturity up a notch from where it needed to be. And I think he maybe was taking for granted the vote and was not mindful of the fact that there even could be backlash against him. Maybe he started feeling invincible at some point.
Yeah. You know, the problem for Jason, and I'm going to mix my shows up, like, he's like one of these like Westworld robots that he just gets on a loop and he just like is like going over and over and over. Shelby this, Shelby this, Shelby this. And you need to sort of like, you know, fix his programming, get him on another loop.
It's interesting to me because I felt like the Jason in the first like quarter or so of the game was an entirely different Jason than the one we saw for the rest of the game. There was a point in which something kind of flipped inside of him.
Because in the beginning, Taryn, he ran out of cigarettes a quarter of the way through the game. That's what it was.
Well, there was like before that. I mean, and I think it happened before he ran out of cigarettes, but like before this moment, he was talking about like, you know, this is just a game. We're all going to be friends outside of it. We need to be careful. You know, we can have fun. We can make fun of people, but you need to be careful about what you say because people will jump down your throat. But then there reached a point where it almost seemed like he got lost in the game and he forgot about that conscientious side of himself. And he got lost in this kind of this mist of like, I'm going to be bitter. I'm going to be angry. I'm going to be vicious in a fun way, but also in a way that it's really going to turn people against me. And he kind of forgot all of the stuff that he had been talking about in the beginning of the season, which I thought was really smart. And I feel like if he had stuck with that, we could have seen an entirely different game from him, which I find interesting. It was almost like the corruption of his character throughout the entire season.
It's kind of hard though to play America because America becomes resentful and aware of it when you're playing them, when you're lying to them in the diary room or saying things that are very transparent. And also, you are still living your own life. And the focus one has to be getting yourself aligned in the game and getting to the end of the game. So I found strategically one of the easiest things in Big Brother is to jump on bandwagons and dogpile. We see it every single season. Once there is public enemy number one, that's why it's so hard for people to escape a backdoor. Because once you're buried in this game. You become, don't touch me and this and that. And I think a lot of what I felt Jason was doing was aiming the target at someone and trying to not let go of it. And I just think, unfortunately for him, he has a particularly vile and outspoken way of doing so.
You know what else I think was a turning point in the game was with the point where I think it was, did America nominate Neely at the point and he wanted America to have nominated Shelby? And he was really indignant with America at that point. And I remember sort of like we were in New York for the live show that week. And he was really like, you know, going on and on like, what are you doing, America? Why are you putting Shelby in? Like, Shelby, she's a hooker. What are you to America? And I think that was a point where he really did lose a lot of that goodwill that he had in the beginning of the season.
Yeah, that's exactly the point I was trying to come up with, Rob. That's exactly the moment where he shifted from the more reasonable Jason to the one that kind of just went full tilt from that point on.
Yeah, that America had his back, he felt like, until that point. And then he was like really angry. Like, why aren't you doing what I want? Like, why? Like, you know me. I'm your friend. I'm Jason. Remember? Why would you not do? Why would you put Shelby, who I hate, and not put her up on the block? And you had this chance. So
I do still want to speak to the perspective of being inside the house one more time, though. And again, this is not defending Jason. This is defending the entire tea of the cast construct and everyone who's ever been on the show. It's just the concept of being in there. Like, for example, on my season, Dick and Jen had probably the number one rivalry war in Big Brother history, went at each other all season in a particularly despicable manner. Eric, the real life person, would never once have allowed Dick to speak to Jen in the manner that he spoke to her in the house. But every time that in the house he did it, you could see me and Jessica and Jamaica giggling in the background with glee because it meant it was another 3 weeks I was staying in the house because they were fighting right over our heads. And it meant Kale was going and Mike was going and Jen was going and his crony was going and they kept fighting each other. And every time they fought meant the focus was on them and that they were at war and the season was about how they're going to get each other out. And we saw that happen on Survivor where David and Zeke just got fixated on each other and so on and so forth. And in the scope of a game for a lot of money, I'm going to let things happen that I would never let happen in my normal life. And I do not respect adult men bullying 20-year-old girls. And I would have never stood for that in real life. But I stood for it in the scope of the game. And I took a lot of flack for it. And people said, are you being cowardly? Are you saying that you're in support of his action? No, I'm saying I'm in support of me staying out of it and trying to win $500,000.
Well, I do have a question just kind of while we're on this for Eric. Eric, do you think if BB16 was an OTT season, do you think Cody beats Derek?
I think Frankie would have won, of course.
Frankie wins. Yeah, right. Of course. Right. Yeah. How could we forget?
Okay.
Contest.
Couple more questions with Eric. Also, happy birthday wishes to Glenn Garcia. Happy birthday, Glenn.
Love you, Woo. Glenn.
Yeah. Happy birthday to Glenn. Any?
Time to boogie down in the Bronx.
Yes, I like to see a 365 page a day calendar from Glenn for the holidays.
365. Okay.
But yeah, Glenn a day. It would be fantastic.
Glenn a day. All right. Stephen H., how do you think Morgan would do on an All Stars BB proper season? Taryn or Alex in 10 seconds or less? I actually think that she would. Who would come for her? Who would come for her? Eric? Is Morgan not Final Four on a BB All Star season?
Yeah, top seven for sure, because she's a total non-entity, would have no one at targeting her or at war with her. And for the very reason she made it to the end of this game, and which is what, you know, happens a lot of times on All-Star seasons. It's either the cream rises to the top or the cream picks each other off and the crap rises.
Yeah.
To the top,
and look, so. She wins a Final Four veto. Who knows that you put her in BB All-Stars? She might be the winner.
She'd be the first person in the history of an All-Star season where like people on her cast would have no idea who she is.
That's a good thing.
Ambers and Parvati's in the sort of those exactly who would do well on an All-Star season.
Take it from somebody who said like, okay, I know one person is not going to win this All-Star season. Like it happens. It happens, everybody. Yeah. Okay. Matthew has a question. How much of a factor was Alex campaigning for her sister? Do you think that having Alex on RHAP the night before voting helped get Morgan for the, I've seen this out there where people have sort of laid this on RHAP that because we had Alex on the podcast on Tuesday night, Eric, that it is that is the reason why Morgan was the winner. I like to call this the Kelly Wentworth factor.
I call it the liberal ball smasher media bias.
Right. So here's the thing where I only get people telling me, oh, Jason didn't win because Alex was on RHAP. Nobody is saying to me, oh, Rob, thank you for Morgan winning. Thank you so much. Nobody like the same things like the people that didn't like Kelly Wentworth would say to me, Kelly Wentworth only got on Survivor Second Chance because of RHAP. Nobody who loved Kelly Wentworth was like, oh, Rob, thank you so much. Kelly Wentworth got on. So I would say I don't buy this for 1 second that people who that there was any undecided voters who then switched their vote to Morgan from Jason or Chrissy because Alex was on. And I felt like that we gave Alex a very fair and honest interview, Eric.
Well, I think that one of the things that's so hilarious about this is that you had the RHAP crew, and then there's the Redditors, and there's the Twitterers, and there's the Jokers crew. These are the least intimidating gangs since.
Yeah, a Warriors remake. This is not.
Please make some sort of image for this, please.
Right. Talk about the keyboard warriors. This is the meme of a lifetime with everyone hitting each other over the head with their laptops, for God's sakes. Yeah.
Come out and play.
Yes.
It's time for mom.
I really don't buy into this theory one bit. And if people are so feeble-minded that hearing one interview changes their entire perception of what they've watched for the last 2 months, then I guess they'd be swayed in the diary room as well, and so on and so forth. Like, you should be able to process this information yourself and decide who you do or do not want to vote for, regardless of what you heard the night before. Yeah.
And also that, you know, just to speak to the perceived favoritism that we had, that we interviewed Scott and we interviewed Alex. Those were the only two people that said they wanted to come on this podcast that I didn't hear from. You know, I know, you know, Neely never said like, hey, you know what I'd really love to do? RHAP. I'd love to be on that show. So those were the people that I heard from. I mean, I don't know how many more podcasts that we'll do. If Jason wanted to come on here, I'd love to talk to Jason more than I'd love to talk to Morgan, to be perfectly honest about it. I think that the people who've wanted to come on, you know, we jumped through hoops to get them on the show. Like, you know, we went through official channels that I booked these interviews with CBS. It took quite some time. It was weeks before I got Scott on the podcast from when I originally asked CBS to go through the official channels to do it. So it just like, you know, those were the only people that wanted to do it. And that was, it took weeks to get them on the show. And there was only so much time. We weren't going to do a show after Thanksgiving. And that's how it worked out. So we didn't know Morgan was going to be in the final three at the time we booked the interview with Alex.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, Rob, it just speaks to human nature. Everyone had a hand in this thing all season. So when it goes your way, you're not looking for someone to dole out credit to.
Mm-hmm.
When it doesn't go your way, you're sure looking for someone to blame.
I did see
that
on Twitter.
No one's going to come to me after this and say, oh, I appreciate your analysis. They're going to say, oh, so you defend calling women the C word because you said Jason wasn't that bad. We all know the outcome of these things. It's
Eric, just, have you been reading the chat room?
Opinion. Yeah. It's speaking your opinion in public. There are always going to be people that are not happy because you're not driving the narrative that they want you to or the outcome that they think they wanted.
Yes. Okay. Let's do a few more questions. Stefana wants to know, if the whole cast was on the jury, would Morgan still win the game over Jason? I was thinking about this myself. Julie did ask them point blank, like sort of the Survivor finale question, who would vote for this person, who would vote for this person. I thought it was interesting that Justin did not give an answer.
I think it's prototypically Justin.
Yeah.
He marches to the beat of his own drum.
But if we were going to count it out, Alex or Taryn, do you know what the final vote would have been?
I believe Jason would have won. I think Justin's vote would have gone to Jason, and that would have made it, what are the numbers? I think Jason would have won.
Well, there was 10 votes. But 10 I thought votes. Justin said he was going to vote for Morgan.
But assuming it's a jury, he talks to Whitney, who I believe is also voting for Jason. And I think Whitney gets him to vote Jason. And I think he also talked about in his interviews how he might have voted. He said he wanted to vote Morgan. So, you know, who knows, especially if it's a sequestered jury. I think that ultimately Whitney controls his vote, but who knows?
Okay.
If he does, in fact, go Morgan, it's a jury of 10 and a 5-5 cluster mess. So, like, just more reason why that wouldn't have happened.
Okay. Let's do Anthony S. What was the biggest takeaway from OTT besides Taryn's poll being accurate? I mean, Eric, did we learn anything these last couple of months?
I actually will say that I love that this is something that people are so passionate about. The passion does manifest itself.
We didn't think people would like care. You know, we thought like, okay, we'll be there, but I don't know.
Yeah. I thought that was cool. I thought the level of fervor and excitement around it was kind of cool. Obviously we all love the live DRs. I have no idea why they would claim that that's not something that they could carry over. They could easily dedicate one night to it of the feeds. They could easily dedicate one feed of it on one night to the feeds. Like, it really would be something that would be very easy to do, but we'll never see it because it would be in conflict with the narrative that they're telling on the edited show.
I agree.
It's not going to happen for that reason, because there would be a player like me who'd be saying one thing and it would be very, very different than what you'd be seeing of that character on the actual show. But I thought that they were really great here. I would have loved to see like one super old school test of wills. Like, I'd love to have seen the final four, like, hey, you guys sit on this couch and the last person sitting here will make it to the end of this game. I think this was an opportunity. We were watching them unfold. Where was the 16-hour competition on this one? Or maybe today's players couldn't have the desire or care less to go 16 hours for it.
What do they have
to
know?
I would have liked to see someone like Jason, where this really means something to, battle for it. But otherwise, I love the competitions. That was a takeaway for me. I mean, I thought it was a producing achievement. And I mean, this is like really nerding out here, but putting this scale of reality competition online with this level of interaction should be super exciting to anybody who's in the RHAP community. Because if this is a sign of things to come, it means we're going to have a lot more things for us to dig into in the future. If the networks are going to be open to this type of programming, that means the sky's the limit.
Yeah. All right. One last question on the OTT with Eric from Pavlos wants to know, what was the start of what was the strategic value of rubbing armpits into pillows? We probably don't need to explore this. I would say that probably the only strategic value there is, to as much as we want to explore this question, is I think it unites your side against them. I think that you saw Boston Rob in the season that he came back. It was us against them. Hey, we're going to have a shelter for our people and we're going to have a shelter for their people. We're not going to share our rice with their rice. And I think that that's a page out of the returning player playbook of we need to establish us versus them. And I think that that was one of the betters. And not look, I don't endorse the grossness of what Jason did, But in terms of setting up a season as us versus them to ensure that our numbers stay with us, those are the enemies. We need to be focused on them. I think he did a very good job in that. I don't know how much of it was strategic or that's just Jason's natural persona, but I think that you saw Rob do that very well in Redemption Island. I respect his opinion on these things, Eric.
It was one of the problems of OTT, though, because that's what makes Big Brother different than Survivor. The back and forth because of the power structure that you have, the HOH, and the HOH gets to set forth the targets. And then even if you're outnumbered 7-2, you always have the HOH. You always have the veto to get yourself out of it. And this took away the power of the HOHs. So I agree. In a normal season of Big Brother, that unifying philosophy is a great strategy. And I think it's very effective. Like, we do not break our numbers ever. But in this case, being HOH often sent your numbers home, or being, and it got you at your HOH, then your friends on the block, you all of a sudden are down 2 votes. And there were so few players that it just like affected the numbers of the votes. It was just really tricky to play strategically. And I will say this also, when people say, what's the strategic value of the armpits? What's the strategic value of anything that happened on this entire season, period? Maybe there wasn't any good strategist that played this season. Strategy to play. Maybe there wasn't a strategy game to play. Maybe this was a social game. And then, like Rob is saying, the strategy is that it leans into the social unifying factor on your side.
Well, and I can even come up or not. Sorry. And I can even come up with a second, you know, strategic advantage, which is, you know, you rub some filthy naked flesh on someone's pillow. Maybe they get pulled for medical reasons. I don't know. I mean, that's worth a try.
Is that a DQ then?
I don't think that there was any sort of foresight in, if I do this, then this will happen. I am frustrated. I am mad at these people. I'm acting out. And that's what that was.
But don't you guys do childish things on occasion? Like, I'm sorry. Like, we're not all... What fun would the show be if it was just a G-rated show of everyone acting like angels all the time? Then everyone would complain, what is this, Bible study? Are we at, you know, it would be like, you can't win. You cannot win.
I think,
Taryn, last word on this.
The only book allowed in that house.
So I think that we all remember fondly the moments where Boston Rob rubbed the crispy rice into his armpits. And I think that's what we should end on.
Wait until Steve has to eat this crispy rice. You won't believe where I put it.
Although, you know, everybody loved it the other night when Adam put the idol in appropriate places, Eric. So, you know, you got double standard. No, Eric, I want to get your take. CBS announced this week that Survivor was not going to come on with their season 34. Until the second week in March, a new series is going to be on Hunted. Is that a reality series that is appealing to you?
No.
No.
It's going to be horrible.
I've seen the British version of it.
I think it doesn't make sense. Sorry, Taryn. Go ahead.
All right. And I mean, I saw the British version of it and it's pretty boring, but so you can give your take too.
I was just going to say, it's kind of like tough when you're just trying to blend these, like, we've seen this, you know, these like half real worlds with a sort of fake game. And there's just like so many moving parts. It just tends to get a little muddled. Like, you're not really hunting people. I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not sure I'm on board with it.
If anyone's talking about bringing back Capture for a second season, I will totally get on that GoFundMe right
Capture
now.
Capture is off.
And some bad news for the producers of Hunted. Kurt Clark has signed on to podcast about Hunted.
Oh, no!
So we'll see another opportunity to break the Clark curse
from
the podcaster that brought you podcasts of Opposite Worlds, The Quest, Utopia, and more. Comes the Hunted podcast on RHAP later on in 2017.
And this show will have the exact same fate as all of those shows.
One hit wonder.
Yeah. All right. So fun stuff. Eric, thank you so much. I know that you were not always popular with your opinions tonight. It was a very polarizing times, but I appreciate you coming on and having a strong take. And I hope people respect that, whether they agreed with you or not tonight.
Well, let me tell you something. I couldn't care less if they agree with me or not.
Eric! I'm learning nothing.
This full heel turn from Steiner.
Yeah, but anyway, I actually have one totally irrelevant point, but it is Big Brother related.
Yes.
I think it's time to close the loop on backdooring. I think that it's really gone passé. It's like now been solved by good players in the game, and I don't think we should do this anymore. So I'd like to propose that the HOH nominates two people. And then the HOH decides three additional people that get to play in the veto competition. They can decide if those are their allies or their enemies. But those are the only six people that can end up on the block at the end of the week. So you decide who's playing in the veto, but everyone has a fair chance to play. And those are the other three people you choose are the pool of potential replacement nominees. And you choose of those three, if you want to put your allies in, you want to put your enemies in, and how you want to do it. But up front, you are taking out the backdooring period. One of these five people are going home this week, but they all have a chance to play for their life. And it adds an element of strategy of how many you put from your side to try and help you win the veto versus how many you put from that side versus who you want to offend by naming them as a possible option.
Okay. So it's a little bit of a safety ceremony.
Sort of to an extent. I think it removes the let's put up weak people and then we'll just get out the strong person once we know that they weren't drawn and all of this and that. It takes out the wishy-washiness and it forces people's hands. And I think there would be some interesting new strategy in terms of, am I going to enlist my soldiers to help me get the outcome I want here and keep them on the block? Or am I going to name people I'm comfortable with as potential replacements? Or is the backdoor option...
Okay, a round of questions for Eric. Okay, that's how we're going to handle this. Okay, we each get to ask Eric a question. Eric, does production like the backdoor? Is that good TV to have backdoors happening?
Well, I think it gives you, in my version, a longer time in the week to tell the story of lining up. Here are the five suspects here. Here are the potential targets. And I mean, they would get to fight for it, but it's still, they might not have been the original target. So I think it's still like a minor version of a backdoor still does exist in the three other players, but they're getting a fair shot at it. So I do think, like, I know on my season, and I don't want to tell these like old man, I rode a dinosaur to the Big Brother house stories, but I think at one point we had seven or eight backdoors in a row. And that's because we were playing the game properly. That's the, if I would have put up the same two people every single week and then sent home a third person, because then I really just upset those two people. They're already upset. I'll just keep upsetting them and upsetting and upsetting them and just sending home their allies week after week, the people who are vulnerable and can't protect themselves. And I just think it takes some of the fun of the game away. And I think it would be interesting to put people on the spot and make them announce their intentions a little clearer or use it to throw people off of your scent if you want to. I mean, you can do whatever you want with these spaces.
Alex.
Well, I just, you know, I like the idea. I think it's innovative and fresh and interesting. And I think the best part of it for me personally is that it would get rid of some terminology. I mean, Chrissy has been backdoored five times this season, if you ask her. So I'm super excited for that idea that we can stop hearing about it being used incorrectly.
And Biscuit?
I'm open to it. I mean, it's certainly a lot better than like 90% of the twists that come on Big Brother anyway, so...
Okay. All right. Eric, we're
other house guests during the week. Do they become like an irrelevant part of the story? Are their votes still important? I don't know. I haven't sat down here and written out the guidelines just yet.
No, I think it's good. I think we're sending it to Samoa. There you go. Okay. What, Alex, what did we say on the Big Brother think tank? What did we say the ideas that we were going to put through?
Topaz's baby shower.
It's no longer topical.
Yes. Okay. All right. Well, Eric, again.
Topaz's toddler shower.
Again, great stuff. Eric, what did you want to plug?
I'm going to take a nap.
No. This used to be like a gag, but now you have things to plug.
No, not really.
A podcast for, no one. Yes.
Yeah. Occasionally, I am chatting with my good childhood friends on a podcast, and the gag has been that it really is a podcast for no one's benefit other ourselves. They are self-serving stories that we are telling for our own amusement. However, and I really hate to ruin the gag, I do think that we're going to dig in a little bit and introduce some new format wrinkles and new people into the mix soon, and maybe take it a little bit more seriously.
You're going to remove backdooring from the podcast.
Well, what it really... No, there's plenty of backdooring in our podcast. But there's... I've just run out of mortifying stories to tell about my own life. I don't like telling present mortifying stories because those people might listen. Like, so, you know, it becomes dicey. And like, yes... I mortified myself hundreds of times in high school and college, but like we're starting to, the well is running dry a little bit, which is forcing us from a creative standpoint to actually maybe take it a hair more seriously. If anyone were to be interested in listening, do not start at the beginning. At the beginning, we literally hit record. And while we were sitting on the couch, chatted, start from episode 15 and work your way backwards. I think you will find greater appreciation, if there is any appreciation to be found, if you start in the later episodes and not the early episodes.
I just want to quickly say about Eric's podcast, as somebody who has spoken to Eric in person, and I really love speaking to Eric, listening to his podcast is like you're having a conversation with Eric and his friend Mike, who is like exactly like Eric and hilarious. And so like, if you want to be in on that experience, you should absolutely give it a try, because it's really fun. It's a really fun listen. And I listen to a lot of podcasts.
Yes, at 3x speed. How do you tell the difference between Eric and Mike in 3x speed, Terry?
I can't in 3x. I actually listened to Eric's podcast at 1x speed.
Whoa, look at you, Terry.
Eric and Julie Chen at 3x.
Yeah. I mean, the jokes won't come through if they come too fast. They talk
it's actually
fast
quite now. Easy. I'm incredibly mean and Mike is a lot nicer.
Yeah, that's mostly how we tell them apart.
If someone's saying something completely horrifying, it's always me. And I will say this, you know, you're in the public eye, and yes, I let my hair down a little bit tonight and said some unpopular things. But one of my motivations for doing it is that I have been a little calculated and careful with my words for the better part of a decade now, whether that was as a potential returning player, whether that was to appease a certain fan base or this and that. And also, we nerd out. We dig in and we analyze the strategy. I wanted to do something that truly wasn't for anyone's benefit, which was really just me amusing myself in a heightened way. I mean, listen, we play it up a little bit on the podcast. Do we sit around every night and talk like this? No, we don't. But at the same time, I wanted to just enjoy myself and just say stuff that people 9 years ago would have said, I did not know that this is how Eric truly behaves. And I'm ready for people to meet the real me, whether they like it or not, honestly.
Very shocking.
Okay. Wow. All right. Well, yeah, send me the best episode. Send me the link. Send me the link to the best show. All right.
My favorite part was hearing Eric's Vince McMahon story, which I heard in person, very inebriated, then like on the podcast and being like hearing the same cadence and stuff like that. I was like, it's a great story. And so to hear it again and be like, oh yeah, I remember this, but this is good.
Okay. Fantastic job here tonight. What is the hashtag, Eric?
It's probably unbeknownst to me, like, we hate Eric now.
Hashtag we.
Hashtag front door Eric.
Front door Eric. Is there going to be any.
Eric is over party.
Eric is canceled.
Let's just, for the sake of, so there's no confusion, Eric Stein is over party. Okay. Just to be absolutely clear about everything. All right.
You know, they say that any publicity is good publicity, Rob. I've taken the Adam Pock approach tonight.
We're going to get you to those 75,000 followers.
Yeah.
One way or another.
More like hemorrhage them down the 75, probably.
Okay. All right. Fun stuff. Thanks, everybody, for checking this out. We got some great Survivor podcasts up right now between our podcast with Shireen, with Mike Bloom. The Mike Bloom voicemail show is sufficiently ridiculous. I highly encourage you guys to check that out over the weekend. We got bonus coverage coming up with Matt Cerrone from MetsBlog.com, Nick Iadanza from Australian Survivor, and then we'll get back into everything again on the Survivor next week. Take care, everybody. Thanks so much to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. And we'll talk to you soon. Bye.